Blog Talk Radio.
Who won their conference and a ticket to the Super Bowl in Arizona? Find out now on the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. And that's right, the cue of the music also means it's time for the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. Hope everybody's doing as well as we are here this week. Of course, I am Jeremy the Impact York, joined this week by the coach, Haywood Hill. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Reggie's out on assignment this week, and I know that sounds like generic coach speak to a lot of people, but he actually had some other things he needed to do, and we look forward to having him back next week. As much as a lot of people thought, there's not a whole lot going on and not much we could talk about. I said au contraire, mon frere. We give you a head coaching update. There has been three new hires, and we'll kind of talk about that. We'll get a little more into what this veteran combine could actually mean for some of the guys, and I actually have a list of people who are already trying to put their name in the hat. We will be joined by Mark Cooper of the ATL Falcoholics tailgate, a great friend of the show, and a very, very huge Atlanta fan. It'll be good to talk to Mark again, and we're going to get some Icky Woods today, too, to play off of that that great Geico commercial he's in. Icky will be calling in a little bit later as well. Like I said, I am excited to be here. I know Coach is, too, so we'll jump right into we'll just quickly go over those picks from last week. Obviously, New England had the amazing blowout against Indianapolis, and we'll get into that in a second. We all picked New England on that one anyway. And Reggie actually made up a little ground on us as he picked Seattle over Green Bay, and we'll get into that game next. But that will update our picks for everybody following along at home. Reggie is now at 6-4 in the playoffs, and Coach, me and you are at 7-3. So we're going to have to do our best to keep him off of us.
We're one game from finishing it.
Do what?
Hey, we're one game away from finishing it up.
Right, exactly, because as much as I'd love to include the Pro Bowl, it's just it would be so hard to do to try to figure out, because they haven't even solidified the rosters to this point, and it's just for show. And hopefully our listeners would watch it, but I feel like not a lot of people will.
Yeah, it's one of those games where it had lost a lot of its zeal to the point that the commissioner made it a point to now bring back the level of competitiveness to that game. So I think now you're going to start seeing a little bit more come out of that, and hopefully that brings it back to the level of where it should be in you being selected to play in such a critical game.
Yeah, because I think there is a lot that goes into it, and we'll get into the Pro Bowl here in a second. I did say we'll start on these games, so let's start by reviewing the Green Bay Packers at the Seattle Seahawks. We'll start real quickly, and I'll let you go first on this. Just your initial takeaways, initial reaction to the way the game played out.
Okay, I think fans got exactly where I thought that they would get out of the game, a very competitive game. A game that most definitely proved that they had the best two teams in the NFC in it. I think that both the conference championship games produced the best team that I felt that should have been there. I think that Aaron Rodgers did as best as he could in this game. I think he was under a tremendous amount of pain, honestly. You could tell by the way his foot began to buckle and some other things that just made it really rough. For him as far as the game is concerned. But I think other players stepped up. I think the offensive line did a great job of blocking for him. And just once you take those things into consideration, I think that Green Bay had done all that they could do to keep themselves alive as it pertains to just playing in the game.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with those. And as we were talking before we came on, I'm in agreement with you that I believe Aaron Rodgers may have been 30 or 40% healthy, if that. and I think that really did play into he just didn't have anything left to make it enough throws, and between the running game of Eddie Lacy not really taking off all that much, and the fact that, you know, we got to give credit to the Seattle, the Legion of Boom, that for 2 years straight have shut down a major powerhouse offense, and this time it was Green Bay who had the best offense all year long. So, you know, we'll give the credit to Seattle there. I'll also give credit, I'm not a big fan of Russell Wilson, but when it comes time to make plays, he just makes plays.
Yeah, I agree. I think Russell most definitely is deserving of this. I think you have to put him right now amongst those quarterbacks who've done it, you know, within a short span of his career. 2 and 3 years or 2 and 4 years is not a bad resume to have. I think he's proven that, you know, he most definitely is a viable quarterback in this league, and I think it's going to be very interesting what the Super Bowl still holds yet in the next couple of weeks.
Well, and since you brought it up, there's actually two quarterbacks I was going to talk about that have expiring contracts, with Russell Wilson being one of them. We'll talk about the other one in a minute. Real quickly, we'll kind of segue into this and then jump back into the game. The way Russell Wilson plays, and now this is going to be two Super Bowls in 3 years, I believe. Should he be paid, you know, top five quarterback money, or should he be right underneath that?
Oh, absolutely. He most definitely has proven himself. He rolled the dice because an offer was given to him prior to yesterday, heading back to the Super Bowl. He most definitely has proven that he is deserving of a maxed out contract, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would actually agree for the same reasons. It's just, I mean, and this will get brought up with Jameis Winston being in this draft class as well. Whether you like him on or off the field, or you like the way he, because he's a pretty respectable guy. Like I said, I'm not the world's biggest Russell Wilson fan, but at the same time, I respect what he does on a field. If he's putting that top five, who do you see as those other four right now?
I most definitely would have to say that you can't remove Tom Brady from that top. You cannot remove Aaron Rodgers from that. I don't see where you remove...
Yeah, because I agree with those three, and I've actually got three more in my head, so I'm trying to eliminate one as we're talking.
You know what? I wouldn't be too far-fetched to say that Andrew Luck is going to be worthy of that.
Okay.
And I would have to say possibly Cam Newton is most definitely worthy of that.
Okay, he was actually not on my list. He would be right outside of it. I had it down to either Tony Romo or Big Ben right now as far as who would maybe be that fifth place. But I could see the argument for Cam Newton as well.
Yeah, the reason why I argue for Cam versus Romo and or Ben. Ben has been there, and he's had pieces around him for a long time. Likewise, Romo has been in that same situation. But the difference maker is if Cam had that all along in Carolina, and they're building toward that. I think you see a lot of difference makers if he had those pieces, let's say, 3 years ago, where he's always played with, you know, somewhat a little bit slightly less than the things that he needs there in Carolina. They are on the right track, man. They most definitely are on the right track.
Yeah, and they did pick up his fifth-year option or whatever it was, so Cam will be staying in Carolina. And a quick little note on that, in your opinion, if Steve Smith is a Carolina Panther this season, do you think they win that game against Seattle?
You know what? I don't know if they win that game against Seattle, but I will say that it would have been a different type of game to be played. I think when you go and look at what Mr. Smith has done over with the Ravens, I think that piece was missing from their offense. They had a running game. They most definitely had all the other pieces in place, but I think in their receiving core, they missed having a veteran such as himself, although they had some veteran players. I think they miss having a veteran such as itself, which would have been pushed Mr. Benjamin a little bit harder and worked with him a little bit more on the intricacies of how to play the game as a one. I don't think that Mr. Smith would have been selfish in that area. I think he would have pushed him harder in that area.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that as well. Jumping back to the Green Bay-Seattle game, we kind of talked about the Legion of Boom and the way the Seattle defense works, and obviously with one of the head coaching updates here in a minute, we can get more into the scheme. But as far as Green Bay, where do they go from here?
Well, one thing that Green Bay most definitely has to look at is where are they with their contracts? I mean, you know, what's going to be at stake as you move toward the draft and as you move toward next year? As you can see, each year gets, in my opinion, it gets shorter and shorter the offseason, because with the OTAs and, you know, you're trying to rest your body and you have to go through surgery, the season, you know, before you know, you blink and blink again, and now it's July. So I think the biggest thing that the team will be looking at most definitely is what they're going to be looking to acquire in the draft. And a lot of that's going to be based around contracts and injuries and long sustained injuries. I'm not talking about injuries where guys will be back, you know, more definitely healthy for training camp. But, where does the ball bounce when it comes to the contracts, the extensions, and the re-ups? On some of those contracts, who's going to start looking at max money and how it affects the overall salary cap.
Yeah, and I think one thing that kind of the elephant in the room up in Green Bay, and you might know more about this than me, but at some point you got to put a serviceable backup behind Aaron Rodgers, and maybe Matt Flynn is serviceable, but for the most part, this seems to happen the last couple years at least, where Aaron Rodgers takes a major injury, not sure if he's going to come back. He was able to come back last year, was able to play through most of it this year. But the reason he's having to play through most of this is not just the testament to his toughness, but he pretty much has to play because there's so many question marks after him.
Yeah, I agree. I think that most definitely the organization will take a good, strong, and critical look at that position now. Most definitely, he played, with his injury. He's a warrior. There's no question he's a warrior. But in the real world of football, as it pertains to the business side, I'm sure the organization most definitely has to start to look at what are we going to do if we lose Aaron Rodgers for a season, half a season, quarter of a season. Realistically, they have to start addressing that issue at quarterback.
Yeah, definitely so. And something that we kind of mentioned, because stuff we've heard, not always what we think, but I'll at least throw it out here. From an NFL and a fan and a sports perspective just in general, the fact that Seattle was able to come back and win this is actually better for the entertainment value of it. And we were mentioning because of the Aaron Rodgers injury and some other things going on with Green Bay that Seattle was actually the better team to move on, in that we don't know to what, to how ready Green Bay would have been for the Super Bowl in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if there is a game to lose, the game is the NFC Championship. I think it's harder to swallow if you go to the Super Bowl and you lose it there, especially with Aaron's health. I think that a different type of game there. I mean, the journey to get to the Super Bowl is one thing, and once you have arrived and played that game, it's something else. So I don't know if he could have held up, honestly, a quarter or even a half in the Super Bowl. I just think that he had pushed his body to the max, and you have to commend him for that. But in the same token, I have to also turn my hat to Seattle and what they were able to get done.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not trying to take away from anything the Seahawks did. They did do a pretty good comeback. No matter which way you want to say it, whether they won the game or Green Bay lost the game, regardless, Seattle moves on, cashes their ticket, punches their ticket, so to say, for Arizona in a couple weeks. With the other game, the Indianapolis Colts at the New England Patriots, for the most part, the Colts come out and did exactly what I thought they needed to do, come down and score really quickly, and then it just got out of hand after that, with the Patriots just throwing up 45 points, I believe, for the 45-7 victory. What did you take away from this game?
Well, I mean, most definitely that the Colts proved that they are, you know, that they are going to be contenders, but New England proved that they are champions, and that made a difference. I think that the Patriots most definitely imposed their will, and that's what a veteran quarterback who has seen that many appearances in these championship games as well as Super Bowls brings to the table.
Yeah, and like we were saying as well, the Colts are building it the right way where in the last 3 years they made the playoffs, then they won the first game, the wild card round, they won the divisional round, and then now they were in the AFC championship game. They weren't quite ready to compete with New England, I don't think. They still need some pieces, but Andrew Luck has just proven that, you know, in the same way you said Cam Newton earlier, to me he's proven he's one of these top five guys. Because he doesn't have a lot of pieces around him, and yet he somehow finds a way to win games.
Yeah, I agree. I think Andrew Luck most definitely is a student of the game. He's proven himself. He's a competitor. I think they're young. I would still say that they're young, and they're probably maybe two, if not three, pieces away from where they need to be consistently for them to be a contender on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and unfortunately for them, they're going to be so low in the draft that they may not be able to pick up what would actually help them the most, and that would be either Melvin Gordon or Todd Gurley, because they clearly need a running back, and they need a pretty good one.
Yeah, but that plays back into the free agent market. That will play back into the veteran combine that they're doing. You know, there are some players out there that will be available to them, and I guess more importantly, they just have to find what's going to best fit their offensive scheme and, more importantly, their locker room and their organization.
Right, and, you know, clearly Tom Brady was able to prove why he's still considered a top guy. We'll get into the ball inflation in a minute, but he was able to prove that he pretty much has Julian Edelman that he throws to a good bit, and then he throws to Gronk. But for the most part, the Patriots have suddenly built a run game this year that could be very tough for Seattle to stop.
Well, you don't think people fail to realize that they have, you know, they have quite a number of running backs over there, and they most definitely can switch them in and switch them out. As you know, New England has always been known for their ability to have players play at least two positions. That's one of the reasons why they are successful. These guys are not only athletes, but they're dual threats in different areas on the field. So it would not surprise me if they take a guard and put him at fullback. I mean, these type of things happens with this organization, and you just have to be prepared for them. Most definitely, when it comes to the strategy of playing against the Patriots.
Yeah, definitely, and that's what I always tell people about the Patriots is everybody who's on that 53-man roster, probably everybody on the 75-man roster, can do at least one other skill or play another position besides the one they're listed as, and that's just the way Belichick likes to set up his team. To me, I think that's a great thing. I mean, suddenly, you know, Brady may kick a field goal one day, or you may see Gronkowski play linebacker, or, you know, you could see Brandon Browner as the center. It really makes it to where if there is even a catastrophic injury, it's very easy for them to just move past it really quickly.
Yeah, well, if you notice that when they have these injuries, you don't ever see their head coach, the hair stands up on the back of his neck. I mean, it's just they have that type of system where they have guys that have the ability to play those multiple positions, and it plays in their draft as well. So when they're looking at a player, they're looking at not only what the player would do primarily for the organization as far as position, but where that player can plug in and be, if not second or third, best on the team at a second position. So that gives flexibility to what they can do. It also gives them, as far as personnel, but it also gives them a lot of different looks and threats that are unforeseen for an offense and or defensive coordinator as well as head coaches as they begin to game plan. You're looking for one guy to do this primarily 80-90% of the game, but in actuality, playing against the Patriots, they might not do that but 50% of the game and move the player somewhere else altogether outside of the range and the scope of your game plan.
Absolutely. And, of course, with it being the topic of conversation for practically every media outlet, including CNN and MSNBC and all this stuff, quickly we'll get into this thing about possible, Deflategate or something like that. Basically, it's where supposedly the 11 of the 12 footballs provided by the Patriots for this game were deemed as not enough air pressure in them, which could carry some sort of fine or penalty. We don't know about it yet, but what is your quick take on this?
Well, as you can see, there are a lot of quarterbacks that are coming to the forefront to speak on this subject. Quarterbacks have their things that they like. Footballs are one is a primary tool as to what they use. I think what is being over emphasized and or stressed is this issue just with the Patriots. If anybody's been paying attention to the media, you notice that Aaron Rodgers has spoke about this, Brad Johnson has spoke about this, and I'm sure there are others. There was a point in the game where there was an official stoppage to right. basically remove the ball and place the scrimmage ball. All of these balls are inspected, if you will. I think the problem with this is there is no mid-max range on what is considered inflated, over-inflated, or under-inflated. And I think that's why you don't hear so much pushback, because at any given time, when that incident took place and was brought to the attention of the head coach of the Colts, he could have immediately called the referee over, gave him that ball for inspection, had a conversation about it, but then again, do that, you open yourself up to possibly something being done in reverse. So I think moving forward in the offseason, the competition committee will get most definitely get a handle on this. They will come up with a mid-max range on the balls. They will come up with what is deemed acceptable versus unacceptable, and they'll move on. But if you notice, you don't get a lot. It's not getting a lot of momentum. It's just talk right now because I don't think that this has been the issue that people want to really make it. I don't think it made a difference in the game because the ball was intercepted, obviously. So there's the other argument on the other side of that. But I think one of the things that will possibly come out, and that is as they begin to dibble and dab into this because it has gained some momentum, is what are the balls being inflated with? Are they, you know, what is the chemical makeup of that pressure inside the ball? Is it all oxygen? Is it helium? Is it oxygen and nitrogen? What's in this ball? So those are the other things that are going to be probably brought to the forefront as they begin to discuss in the offseason. But I don't think you hear anything else about this other than the Super Bowl. They'll go in, they'll have something in place to deal with that subject at hand to make sure that the balls are weighed, that they come up with a roundabout number, a mid-max, and then they'll check those balls probably at the beginning of the game and then again at halftime. So I think that's what they use at least as a starting point to address the issue moving forward.
Right, and I have two quick points. The first one, just as a comical note, just imagine if they were able to inflate these with, you know, 15 pounds of helium, and you go to spike them, and they go up like one of those candy bars from the commercial. I think that'd be pretty funny. But on the serious note, I actually had a former team official, and I won't mention the person or the team, obviously, or even on what level they were on. But I'll paraphrase. He goes, every single football team in college and the pros alter their footballs after checking with the refs. We rarely get caught, but it's happened. Like USC got caught last year. Now the Patriots are getting investigated. The rules are kind of vague, is the way he put it. Every quarterback likes their footballs to be a certain way, so the managers and team officials make sure they do it that way. It's just what you do. This whole thing's kind of just going to result in a fine. It's kind of being blown up a little bit. And more than likely, the Patriots will do it again, possibly the Super Bowl, because the Seahawks will too. The Colts did, the Packers did, etc. It shouldn't be made the big deal it is. And he even goes on to mention a couple quarterbacks that were around when he was a team official. And he said one wanted a little less air, one liked a little more. Now, I also, and he says, they would also use wax to break them in or dirty them up prior to being used, which is not illegal. And you had mentioned some things you had heard before from just all your years of experience and stuff. Not necessarily anything you did. We're not going to implicate that in any way. But, you know, taking them outside and scuffing the ball up. And I've heard of people putting them in the dryer so that you can kick a field goal better and stuff like that.
I think what people fail to realize is that when you get these brand new balls, they have this coating on them. They're very difficult to handle, and unless they're going to start playing with brand new balls in every game, then that's going to become an issue. So I think that it somewhat is being blown out of proportion again. If you go, you're not going to find this concrete rule that specifically deals with the weight or what can be considered less than or more than as far as the ball is concerned. As long as the ball is basically is being held to somewhat a manufacturer type spec, as you would a car site. And that's the analogy that I like to use for those that are not very, fluent with just particularly this sport. You know, if you look at a time tip, it's a little deflated, but you can also tell if it's very underinflated. So it's just one of those things where there's a level of comfort with the football. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I don't think it's making that difference in the game, because I guarantee you, if you go and grab every football that was used in game play this year, you're going to even those balls that might have been, let's say, 13 ounces or what have you, by the time the ball gets thrown, gets walls, bounces off helmets, gets fumbled, gets slammed on the ground, no ball is going to contain the approximate weight throughout the whole game. So, again, like I said, I think it's kind of vague. I think it's interesting, but it is a vague point right now because it did not change the outcome of the game. And, again, the ball was intercepted. So that would be the other argument on the other side of the coin.
Right. And, you know, we'll still just have to wait till this investigation's over with. I was able to see the replay of Belichick's press conference, to which he pretty much made a statement about it and then tried to move on and talk about other things. Obviously, they wouldn't let him do that, but he said he's said everything he knows. He's told he's told everybody everything he knows. Tom Brady pretty much said the same thing. He was very candid in his press conference. So, you know, we'll just have to wait till this investigation's concluded so that we know exactly what happened. But I want to go back to Andrew Luck real quick, because he was the other one, the other quarterback I wanted to mention, who has a contract coming up. From what I'm hearing, the Colts are looking at paying him between a 4- and 5-year deal, upwards of somewhere around $25 million a year, which would make him the highest paid, you know, barring whatever Seattle gives to Russell Wilson. Does this seem a little high, or do you think Andrew Luck is earning every bit of this $25 million?
Well, again, congratulations to him if he can get a contract that large. But again, we've had discussions on contracts, and the question would be how much this money would be, you know, toward the forward end of the contract, and I think that's what's going to make the difference. I think he most definitely has proven himself. Again, I always tell players, you know, to kind of look at what your true market value is and where it will be at the back end of a contract such as that. So, again, he most definitely is earning his ability to be there. I don't know if $25 million is that net worth, but if the organization feels it, that's where it is, at least he knows his market value at this point.
Right, and if they were able to sign him to the 25-per-year contract, then that would pretty much put the ball in Seattle's court on what to do with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I agree. And I wanted to just go back forward just for about 30 seconds if I can, Jeremy.
Sure.
With the issue with the deflation of the balls.
Right.
The one thing that some people are forgetting is that these balls are handled by officials. And with those balls being handled by officials, they can look and see and or feel, you know, somewhat the weight of a ball that's slightly heavier than the other. Now, is that a expert feeling? I would probably say not. But, again, I think that that's a part of it that also gets missing, is these balls are handled by officials that are actually in the game. So that was the only other little tidbit I wanted to just add back to that deflation issue. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay. Yeah, it's something they're going to have to monitor, and I think it could come down to, you know, maybe at some point the referees check the balls 30 minutes before going out, and they don't go back to the teams, and maybe at halftime they look at them as well, like you were mentioning. They're going to have to change the protocol of some kind, but you're going to find the reason why all these other teams are quiet and only Aaron Rodgers, who says he likes his a little overfilled, and Brad Johnson, who was the quarterback for Tampa Bay back when they won their Super Bowl, actually said that he paid somebody $7,500 to make sure that the balls were the way he wanted them for the Super Bowl. I mean, you're going to kind of see some people come out of the woodwork on it a little bit, but at the same time, I think people are being quiet because this is a league-wide thing and not just, you know, team by team.
Yeah, it's probably safe to say that because, again, you don't hear a lot of momentum or pushback from other organizations speaking of this, and that's simply due to the fact that I don't think it's as big of an issue as people want to make it. You know, I think it's just one of those things, again, that you find to talk about. And, again, I'm not defending that. I'm just saying I don't think if you don't hear other people talking about it, it obviously is not that big of a deal.
Right. It could easily just blow over, and they do have to handle things, you know, a lot better thanks to the Ray Rice situation and obviously Spygate. And to me, this is a lot like the Saints Bounty Gate thing where you don't want to make a mistake either with a punishment or the investigation. But I don't think they're as big of an issue as those particular items were. As we're waiting on Icky to call in here in the next few minutes, real quickly, the Pro Bowl is this weekend. It's going to be 8 o'clock. They've been dividing up the teams. Like we said, we're not 100% sure as to how many people are going to watch it because over the years they've been trying to spice this up. I think they're doing a good job with this fantasy draft. I just think it's taken way too long to do it. Have you been able to catch any of the rosters?
I looked at a little bit of it, Jeremy. Again, I think it's quite entertaining to put these rosters together and have these teams play. I think, again, that's the NFL's way of just extending some things as you look forward to the Super Bowl. But, again, it's a way of connecting the fans and also just giving that little extra to the game because, like I said, at one time, the Pro Bowl was getting such a bad rap that players were just basically passing up the opportunity and were just using it for a vacation. So now I think the privilege of being selected as a Pro Bowler and, more importantly, playing in the Pro Bowl game is starting to come back to the forefront from a level of competition. I think this is a baseline that is being used to help keep that competitive spirit going.
Right, and I don't know, the fact that it's not in Hawaii is a detractor for some. I believe 3 or 4 of the 6 quarterbacks initially voted in aren't going either because they're in the Super Bowl or for injury purposes. I was just breezing over a couple of the rosters. As far as it's between Chris Carter and Michael Irvin are the captains this year. And let's see, on one team, which is Chris Carter's team, you'll have Jamal Charles running the ball with John Kuhn of the Packers blocking. You'll have Andrew Luck throwing to Antonio Brown, Martellus Bennett, and A.J. Green, which is a pretty good matchup because they would be covered by Vontae Davis and Joe Hayden. But to me, it looks like Team Irvin could pull this one out. They got the Raiders fullback Marcel Reese on their team, which to me, he's like a Mike Tolbert. He's just a tailback in general. He can play fullback. I think he can play tight end if he tried. He's a great running back as well. But this team intrigues me the most because you got DeMarco Murray running. You've got his buddy Tony Romo beside him throwing the ball to Odell Beckham Jr., Jimmy Graham, and Randall Cobb. And as fun as that is, the guys that would be covering them would be Patrick Peterson and Aqib Talib. To me, that's the one that I would want to see this matchup. It's just I wish it wasn't such a fun game and it was taken a little more seriously because I would love to see these fantasy matchups.
I agree, Jeremy. I think that, again, like I said, the Pro Bowl now is being put back on the level it should be. Now the selections are are in place, and having the draft, again, just adds to the competitive nature of this game again. Now, when you're looking at the matchups, you're starting to understand why they have these matchups and why the NFL, the matchups itself, because then you're taking the best statistically, and you're now placing them against one another and to see why they're selected as Pro Bowlers. So you always get one or two plays in the game that reminds the players of their competitive nature and how you're the best at what you do.
Yeah, and as long as people do remember that, you know, it is an honor to be voted in like this, because, you know, unlike most other sports, it is a little bit of a popularity thing, but the fans tend to get it right, and it is the top players that are getting to go and are at least getting the opportunity to, whether something else holds them back or not.
Yeah, and again, it's another game that allows a lot of the fans to see all of that at one place at one time.
Yeah, I can't lie. The fan in me, I'd love to go see one of these Pro Bowls one day, even if it was in Atlanta. It wouldn't matter to me if it was in the middle of the Montana woods or anything like that. So, I mean, I would look forward to seeing this just to get to see these crazy matchups that usually only happen on a video game.
Right, right. And it also, I don't know if prices are for the actual game itself, but it'd just be funny to see those fans that get a chance to see all of these players that they normally wouldn't see all in one place and then play against each other, and just the intimacy of that game alone with all that great talent.
Absolutely so. And last week we mentioned about the Veteran Combine. Have you heard any more about the Combine?
No, I haven't, but I can tell you that there's a reason why that. Obviously, there are some issues across the board with what they're seeing in the upcoming draft probably over the next 2 years. I mean, yes, you would have players come out. The rookie contracts, I think, play a heavy role, but it also safeguards against salary caps. But a lot of kids have jumped out early in the last season, and now that's kind of that kind of has thinned the pool of players that are going to be drafted or what they see are going to be considered number ones, because remember, if you came as a junior, you left a year before you were projected. So now that's starting to force general managers, player personnel, scouting departments to dig a little bit deeper into basically the backgrounds of these players. And then you're drafting a kid based on what you've seen over a 3-year period solid or a 4-year period solid, you're now forecasting, if you will, for lack of a better term, what the possibility of this player might, what they might become, because they did not, you know, finish their entire time out in school, or you continue to keep this repetitive jumping of your senior year that might have made a difference in where you would have been slotted going into the draft as you came out as a senior. So I think there are a lot of players out there that they're starting to look at that they seem very young. But as we spoke of earlier when we spoke about the Carolina Panthers, we were speaking of the situation of why you most definitely want a veteran player in place as you transition to your younger player, because it's one of those things where, you know, you can have young, talented players, but without the experience, you don't get what you need to push them forward.
Right, and somebody that I wish would be at the Veteran Combine, but I think he may be a little busy as we bring him on right now. He is former Cincinnati Bengals running back and current star of the Geico commercial and the very popular Geico commercial, Icky Woods. How you doing today, Icky?
I'm doing good, boss. What's going on?
What's up, coach? How you doing, Icky? It's great to hear from you, man.
I know that voice anyway. I said, oh, that's Coach A right there. What's happening?
I'm doing great, Icky. Doing great, sir.
Cool. How you guys doing this evening?
We are doing pretty good. And by your reaction there, I guess it is true you will celebrate anything, including being on our show.
Yeah, just about anything. You know, head coach voice. Woo! Coach on the phone now. That's what's up. Yeah, we celebrate just about anything, man. We're down here in New Orleans right now at a conference. So I'm taking a break away to give you guys a holler and see what's going on.
Yeah, and part of the reason we wanted to bring you back on was earlier in the year we had asked you about where you thought the Bengals could go with their season, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on where they did go and where you think they can go from here, like what the next step would be for them.
Well, you know, they had a decent season. We kind of got a little dinged and banged up at the end there. We didn't have all our top guns on offense. We were missing about four or five key people like A.J. Green, Grissom, the young tight end Tyler Alford, Marvin Jones. So we were missing quite a few people on the offensive side of the ball. Defense, we were missing some guys. Burfitt was a big key to that defense, and a few other guys. Now Luka went out early, so you know I say we had the core of our team hurt. They did good. They did a little better than I thought they were going to do. Can we win with Andy Dalton? I think so, because Andy Dalton, you know, in his last 4 years, he's doing something no quarterback has ever done, make it to the playoffs your first 4 years in the league. And so I tell everybody, you know, especially the Cincinnati fans, because they want to win right now. You know, it's been such a long drought for us. And I say, well, you know, look over the last, you know, 20 years, we've had maybe two winning seasons. And I said, now we've had four winning seasons in a row and you guys are complaining? I said, come on, man. I said, this guy is a good quarterback. They talk about firing Marvin Lewis, get rid of Andy Dalton. I said, for one, you're not going to fire Marvin Lewis because Marvin Lewis is the best coach you're going to get for the power the Bengals want to give up. And Andy Dalton is the – they just paid him $100 million. So he ain't going nowhere either. So you might as well get used to those guys. And I said, and you look at all the great quarterbacks like a Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, all those guys, it took those guys 5 or 6 years to get to, you know, get to winning some playoff games and having the great seasons that they've been having over the years. And I said, you just need to give this kid time. You know, he's still a young kid. Well, the quarterbacks, most quarterbacks are in the league 10-plus years. So, you know, give a guy a chance. Please give a guy a chance. I said he's gonna get everything turned around, you know, but if he doesn't do it in the next 2 years, then you start yelling, get rid of him. But, you know, give a guy a chance. He'll win some big games, and he won a big one this year on Monday night against Denver, which is a real big monkey off our back. So every year we seem to be getting a little better. So I'm, you know, looking forward to next year and see what happens then. You know, we've had a great run of the playoffs here the last few weeks. You know, the infamous catch, you know, that they said your boy Dez Bryant caught out in Dallas. But you go back the week before that, the infamous pass interference against the Detroit Lions that was called, and then the flag was picked up. So I say what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So tell all the Cowboys fans to quit crying. They got a good call last week. The call didn't go their way the following week. So let's move on. Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. I don't know what happened to them in the last 2 minutes of the NFC Championship game. They just act like they forgot how to play football for some reason. But, you know, you gotta take your hat off to those, you know, seats for just hanging in there and grinding and come out with the victory. And then those, you know, those cheating-ass New England Patriots, they always find a way to get into the news for doing something against the rules. But, you know, one thing about that ball club wins a lot of games, man. And, you know, I don't know if they're twisting the rules a little bit. Sound like they're twisting the rules a little bit. But, you know, hey, they made it to the ultimate game. And they'll probably have to give up a couple of draft picks for that shenanigans they put on last weekend, but you know, a 45-7 shellacking of the Colts had more to do with just football. That had to do, I mean, it had more to do with just the deflation of the football, so they say. That had to do with execution as well. The Colts just didn't execute well, so you can't blame the deflation of the balls on the way those guys played. So to sum it up, we got the New England Patriots going up against the Seattle Seahawks. I'm an AFC man by heart, but I can't roll with the Patriots because some of the undershifting stuff they do. So I'm gonna be rooting for the Seattle Seahawks to win the Super Bowl.
Wow, and there you go. Our first celebrity pick right off the gate here is Icky Woods on the board with Seattle. And something we were talking about right before you came on was there is going to be a veteran combine this year where guys that qualify as veterans in the league can go to a combine similar to the rookie combine in order to audition for teams. What are your thoughts on this?
You talking about the service veterans?
No, the just veterans of the NFL, like Tim Tebow, Kevin Cobb, a lot of punters, a lot of guys that have been in and out of the league for 5 years are going to get a chance to kind of re-audition for all the teams.
Well, I think it's a good opportunity for those guys, man. If they can still get out there and play the game, I think it's it'll be good to see what those guys can do. But I think a lot of those guys are probably, since they know about the combine, they'll probably have themselves in shape. And just to get another opportunity to play in the league is always good, man. I'm glad they're doing that to give those guys an opportunity to work out again and maybe get a second career going. A second opportunity at a first career, let me say that. Yeah.
One of the things, Nicky, that I thought about when it came up with this combine and early in the show I spoke on this was the fact that I think that most of the teams now are becoming too young, and you don't see many veterans. I mean, now if you're a 5-year, 7-year veteran, you're pretty old on a football team. And I think that part of this transition with the rookie contracts, which kind of protects the salary cap, if you will, a lot of these guys are coming in and they have to come in and become impact players very quickly. And you can see the difference in when a player has a veteran player with him versus teams that don't have those veteran players around or enough of those veteran players around, let me say that much.
So I think right. Also, I think that's a big reason why they're trying to do that, to get some of those veteran-like players in there who, you know the game and know the business. You know, a lot of the young kids don't know the business of football, so, you know, they get out there and they take a chance when they shouldn't take a chance. So just like the kid in the young kid in the Green Bay game, you know, his job wasn't to try to go up and get that ball. His job was to turn around and block somebody. But, you know, him being a young kid, maybe his second or third year in the league, you know, he wanted to see the ball coming and got big-eyed and tried to go get it. And it just hit off him. And the guy that he was probably supposed to block was the guy who got the onside kick. So,
right.
And like I said, Jordy Nelson was right there, veteran guy, right there behind him to catch the ball. But, you know, the young kid stepped in there and, you know, it hit him. And the guy he was probably supposed to block was the guy who probably got the onside kick. And, you know, they end up losing the game behind that. You know, that wasn't the full reason why they lost the game, because they were still up, but they didn't play no defense and let Marshawn Lynch go down and score, and then the Wiley 2-point conversion. I don't know how in the heck they got that 2-point conversion, because that was a play that I just knew was a blown play, and Russell Wilson, being heady as he is, just threw it up in the air over there, and Wilson went and got it and got the 2-point play, and that's that's probably how they won the game, because they need because they went down and tied it up. If they don't get that 2-point conversion, Green Bay wins the game because they drove down and kicked the field goal. But you need those veteran guys in there who know the business of football, and that's I think one of the reasons why they're doing this veteran combine to get some of those veteran people in there who knows the game of football.
Right, and also the other thing that I added issue to this as well was the fact that because a lot of young men are jumping out their junior year or when they're declared junior, I mean, some of them, you know, they're sophomores, and once they get declared a junior, are now eligible for the draft, and a lot of them are going early and rolling the dice on having a career, at least if they're drafted in the first 2 to 3 rounds, of making those 3 years and get out the contract, try to, sustain themselves. And I think as you do that, from a player personnel standpoint and general managers as well as coaches and scouting department, it is harder for you. Now you're starting to forecast what a player can do versus having the tangibles and the evidence of 3 solid years of football in college to look at to now project them in a draft. Now you're forecasting them in a draft. And I think that over the next 2 years, the draft is going to be kind of thin with players that you were hoping to see them through their junior year or possibly their senior year.
Right. Well, with the doing of this veteran combine, that might encourage a few of those guys to stay in school because, jobs are not going to be as vast as they were when, it was time to come out. So that might encourage a few of the younger kids to stay in school and let their, not only their bodies, but their brain develop a little bit more.
Yep, that is definitely true. And obviously, if people want to find out more about your foundation honoring your son and about asthma awareness, they can go to JavonteWoodsFoundation.org, correct, and get all the information?
Yes, and that's JOVANTE, WoodsFoundation.org. Yeah, get some information. We also got a store up now, too, so you can go on our website and order the cold cut T-shirts, the shuffle shirts, pitchers, footballs, T-shirts, jerseys. You can pretty much get anything on our website now. We got a store up, so if you're looking for some Bengal memorabilia or you're just looking for memorabilia, anything like that, on our website, we will also be in the near future coming out with the Javonte Woods phone app, so you can download our foundation website on your phone. So we're in the process of putting that together as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at the shop right now. I can see many things on here that would look very nice in my studio office here.
Oh, yeah. So just go on there and order, and everything comes with an autograph. I sign it before I send it out, and we'll get it right out to you.
Well, that's great as always, and Icky, it's always good talking to you. I'll let you get back to the conference down in New Orleans, and we just appreciate you calling in.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks, Coach. Hey, we'll have to catch up, brother.
Okay, we sure will.
Okay, man. You guys enjoy and have a wonderful evening.
All right, you too.
All right, later.
And, of course, that was former Cincinnati Bengals running back and star of the current Geico commercials, Icky Woods. It's just always a lot of fun having him on, isn't it, Coach?
Yeah, he is. It is always great to have him on and to do things that he does in his charity. But more importantly, again, having such a class act in Mr. Woods and having him on our show is humbling and a great place.
Oh, yeah. I look forward to meeting him in person hopefully very soon because he is by far one of those people that make an impact in life. And even though it's unfortunate about his son, he's able to use that as a platform to raise awareness for asthma and recognizing signs of issues with breathing problems. And it's just awesome seeing the stuff he does. But real quickly, I know I say real quickly a lot. I guess I need to find a new phrase. But we'll talk real quick on this new thing that popped up just today, which in light of all the New England things is kind of getting overlooked. You know, like I said earlier, our good friend Mark Cooper will be calling in to talk some. He's got some fun stuff coming up as well we wanted to get into. But before we get into that, the Cleveland Browns are currently being investigated for sending text messages to the sideline during games. This is an NFL investigation. Is this that big of an issue?
Well, I guess the question has to be, what was the nature of the text messaging? And they did talk about dealing with social media and things of that nature before, so for tweets and some other purposes. But I guess I'm not quite understanding, you know, if you don't know the nature of what the, you know, what that conversation was about, then it needs to open it for people to kind of, you know, figure it out for themselves. So is there any information that comes along with that?
So far, they don't know. That's why they're investigating, I believe. But if I'm not mistaken, I want to say New England, New Orleans, and Miami have all had similar investigations done about communications and recording devices on the sidelines. So, you know, we'll just have to see about this one. But a few people have asked me already, because this did drop this afternoon, but a few people texted me and asked what kind of repercussions would happen because of this. For the most part, I believe maybe a fine, but more than likely the loss of a draft pick or two. And do you see any other punishment they could give them if, you know, if they are texting about formations or plays?
But I don't see how you have the time to be able to read that, more importantly, text that as a coach. You are, once you're in the game, you most definitely have to pay attention to what's happening at that time in the game. Then, again, a lot of these rules are starting to come up. They will come up as the result of having technology, because now if you think about it, they allow the iPads on the sideline this year.
Right.
Yeah, I guess you use a lot of the paper that was being produced in the imaging prior to that. So again, as technology comes into play, these rules will be added. I think that either you're going to use technology and you're going to keep up with technology, or you're not. And I think that's where the decision has to be made. I think that you have to put some parameters around what you can do with that technology. But again, this is going to be something that's ongoing, as far as if something new comes up, a policy will be put in place for it.
Right. I think for the most part, this will probably get dusted under the rug. I don't think that there was any foul play going on as far as the few things I've heard. But, you know, time will tell as to how this shakes out. And before our guest does call in, real quickly, once again I'm saying real quickly, it must be the phrase of the day, I wanted to update everybody on the head coaching hires. Denver was able to grab Gary Kubiak, which seems, I believe he was a teammate of John Elway's at one point in Denver. He raised his kids in Denver, his family and everything, so it was kind of a good fit. And then Chicago has hired John Fox as the head coach, and also Adam Gase, who was the offensive coordinator under Fox in Denver, is the offensive coordinator in Chicago now. What are your thoughts on these two hires?
Well, again, you know, I didn't think that a lot of these coaches would be down for a very long time. I think that after you step out of the head coaching position, you normally take a step back as a coordinator just to prove that what you've done in the past will work from a safe place. Call the board this fight. But again, I think these are, you know, viable coaches, most definitely deserving of an opportunity to become head coaches again. And again, it's the coaching carousel. Each year it goes to this, every 2 or 3 years you'll see this rotation. Up and down the scale, if you will, or up and down the ladder. But all these coaches are very good football coaches. It's going to be exciting to see what they bring to those organizations with their philosophies and their schemes.
Yeah, I think Kubiak's a good hire for Denver in that he's going to shake things up a little bit. He was the, I believe, offensive coordinator for Baltimore this year. And he's been a head coach before. I think he's going to be what Denver's looking for. I actually thought Atlanta should have given a little bit of thought to John Fox. I like where they're going to go with it, and we'll get into that here in a minute. But John Fox and Adam Gase going from Denver to Chicago only benefits Chicago that much more, and especially Jay Cutler, because part of the way through this year, we're going to know if Jay Cutler is salvageable or if you know, if maybe they should go a different direction.
Yeah, that's going to come pretty fast. I think you're going to see that pretty fast. So I don't know how that relationship is going to work out with Mr. Cutler, but again, there's another organization that's going to be addressing the issue of quarterback moving forward with his future.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And on the other side of the break, we're going to go to a break before we get into the Atlanta head coaching update. On the other side of the break, we will have Mark Cooper of the ATL Falcoholics calling in with some awesome stuff. And also we'll get into the Atlanta, some of the Atlanta updates, a couple player news and notes and everything like that. But for the coach, Haywood Hill, I am Jeremy the Impact York. We'll see you guys on the other side for Falcon Zone. From Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. And that's right, the cue in the music means it's time for Falcon Zone. I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill. How we doing, coach?
I'm doing great, Jim.
Obviously, as the season's kind of wound down a little bit, there's not a whole lot going on in Falcon world, but there is a couple of really cool things that really want to get into. Right now, though, I do want to bring on, I hate that Reggie misses that song. I know he loves that song, but with Reggie out, still means we can bring on one of our great friends. Right now, I want to bring on, he's a huge Falcons fan and the quarterback of the undefeated tailgate, the Atlanta Falcoholics, or the ATL Falcoholics, rather, Mr. Mark Cooper. How you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good, Jeremy. Good to be on. How you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Me and Coach were talking right before Falcon Zone and the end zone about some of the head coaching updates. The Atlanta head coaching update is that more than likely it's going to be Seattle's defensive coordinator Dan Quinn, with the offensive coordinator being Kyle Shanahan. Do you have any thoughts on these two?
Well, you know, Dan Quinn has been a hot name, and you know, everybody was worried about the process or whatever, so I'm good with Dan Quinn. I'm kind of shocked with the Kyle Shanahan. It's just something about the last name Shanahan and his last few stops that kind of draw a red flag with me. But if he is the offensive coordinator, I will support my Falcons. I just hope he's not the second coming of Greg Knapp. Another thing is I've heard rumors back and forth about who Quinn's going to pick as his D.C., either somebody from the current Seattle defensive staff, or I heard another name today and I just lost off the tip of my tongue.
I'm trying to think, because the main ones I had heard were the guys he could pull from Seattle, which I'm pretty excited if you're able to pull one of them. Coach, have you heard anything?
I can't say that I have guys right now because, again, a lot of that stuff is still under wraps. One of the things I will say is that getting Coach Quinn here most definitely will be a breath of fresh air, excuse me, for the Falcons. However, I am a little interested to see how Mr. Blank has kind of compartmentalized the team. He has specific people doing specific things, so he's starting to specialize the organization a little bit more. And also, I don't want people to sometimes people get caught up in the hype of things, and this will not be the team that Coach Quinn has in Seattle. So, again, if the expectations are immediately turning Atlanta into what you see in Seattle, you're going to have to be patient with that. That's the business of football. That's what the thing that Icky Woods was speaking of in the last segment. It might be a 2-year and or a 3-year term before he can have this team look like that team.
Right, definitely so. And to catch everybody up, the defensive coach that I would be excited for if Quinn brought with him would be one Ken Norton Jr., the current linebacker coach for the Seattle Seahawks. There's a rumor that he could possibly be the defensive coordinator to come across with Quinn. But, you know, this is all up in the air until February 2nd when you can actually sign Dan Quinn.
Yeah, it is. But that's the whole thing. Everybody's just sitting on their hands and waiting to see who it's going to be. If it's Dan Quinn, just like Coach said, you know, people, he's not going to make a miracle happen his first season. It's going to take a couple seasons to get the type of personnel he is that he likes to run his system. But in the meantime, what folks have to understand is we don't have to have the elite defense to succeed in this league. If we can just get out of defense, and I hope nobody gets mad at me for saying this, to 15th or 16th in the league, this soccer team goes far. Please, with the offense that we have and what we're capable of doing on the opposite side of the ball, our defense doesn't have to play lights out like Seattle. I know people say, oh, well, you know, if you look at the offense that Seattle runs, they have to play lights out defense. But if you can get our defense, like I said, 15, matter of fact, even top 20, this team goes far. So people should still be excited for things to come in the future for the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, and while we're talking about the Falcons' not-so-good defense and everything, what was your kind of end-of-the-year thoughts on the way the Falcons' season went this year?
Hey, Falcons, I mean, it was a roller coaster ride, man. I kept telling everybody to have an even keel. You know, we started out high, and then we come back down low, and we got low and got high again. It was just inconsistent. And we showed flashes of brilliance, but we just couldn't put it together. That means we just got a few more holes that we have to fix. The defense started to get a little bit better toward, you know, in the second half of the season. Still not where we needed to be, but, you know, it's just one of those seasons, and it's like we left everything we had in New Orleans. Like, that was the Super Bowl. And we came to the home game against Carolina, and being in that dome, you know, depending on who you sat by, people had varying things to say, but Carolina's defense came to play that game. It was just one of those things. It just wasn't our year. Let's just put it that way. But the future is bright. We can get this line healthy. We get a few pieces in, get a new coaching staff in just to bring us that shot of energy, which I think he's going to bring some of that Pete Carroll rah-rah with him, especially if he brings Ken Norton Jr. along. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised in the future.
Yeah, definitely so. And I was fortunate enough to be able to be a part of the ATL Falcoholics tailgate group on numerous games and stuff like that. And for people who have either never tailgated or have never tailgated with you guys, to me it's an experience. It's just it's a can't miss. It adds so much more to the experience of going to the game. And like I said, you are by far the quarterback, probably GM as well, and owner of the undefeated tailgate, the ATL Falcoholics. Between the you always keep the beats moving, just fantastic food. I wish I could do half what you guys do food wise, and just always a good time. There's always people wandering in and out, and did I leave anything out here?
No, you pretty much covered the biggest party on pavement. Hey man, you know, we like to eat good and party good and get you ready to go into whatever stadium it is to cheer on the Falcons, man. So, you know, it's all in fun. It's all in spirit, man. We have a good time. We don't meet any strangers. man, we're looking to do so much with the schedule, you know, coming up in 2015 and the additional road games that are pretty close. I mean, look for us to see us more on the road, man. You know, as always, you're always welcome to come out, Jeremy.
Yes, as you mentioned, 2015, one road game in particular that I was talking to Reggie about earlier in the week was the Jacksonville Jaguars stop on the Atlanta Falcons schedule. And obviously through Impact Media, that's the other team that I'm kind of attached to and that I cover. So that game will be a lot of fun because I have friends on both sides, and it'll be good for, like I was telling you guys, it'll be good to get the Atlanta tailgate to hang out with my Jacksonville tailgate friends, and it'll be that much more of a party.
Hey, man, just let us know where they are, because I'm pretty sure it will look like Northside Drive South when that Jacksonville game comes around.
Oh, yeah, that one will definitely be a lot of fun. Maybe you can come down with us, Coach.
Yeah, if my schedule permits, most definitely, you know, I'm tied up a lot, but if my schedule permits, I'm most definitely like to join you guys. I also have a question for you. As it pertains to what you guys do with the fans and your tailgate, now that these new PSAs are out, the question now is, you have cornered the market, but now who is going to be jockeying for some space out off of Northside Drive? Because I mean, when I looked at those PSAs, boy, they were really, really high, and it's going to change the dynamics of the fan base inside of the stadium.
Well, you know, I don't think – you don't see somewhat of a change, but, hey, man, the Atlanta Falcons fans, they might grumble, but, hey, when it comes down to it, we're going to be all lined up north side. Now, with the new stadium coming up, you will see a little different positioning because where we are in the current yellow lot, I can't walk another quarter mile to the new stadium. But, you know, as far as the party going on north side, getting ready to cheer on the whole team, you won't miss a beat.
Right, and I'm sure that you're going to see probably a few more tailgaters as a result of that. That's what I said. It's going to be very interesting to see what comes of this as far as the tickets are concerned. As we talked about on a segment of the show once before, speaking of, and Reggie spoke more candidly about this, about the PSAL and also the ticket prices. How do you see that affecting not necessarily what you guys do from the tailgate perspective, but transitioning that from the tailgate into the actual new facility itself?
Well, with the current situation, you still have a large number of people who don't have tickets that don't come to the game or have you see it. You're still going to have that crowd, but those who like the Falcons regardless or like football or just NFL product itself really are grumbling because they hear it now, but when they see it in 3 years, they're still going to be in there. It's really not going to change much inside. You know,
okay.
Lord willing, I'm going to be in there. But, you know, those who are grumbling right now are those that don't have tickets.
Okay.
Or they sit where they touch the sky. Because
okay.
it's really not going to change. The ones that you that don't necessarily like it are the ones who stay out all day or the ones who watch it at the local bars in the area. Those Falcons fans, yeah, I grumble every time I look at my season ticket renewal invoice. But guess what I do before the deadline? I renew.
Okay.
So those fans who are ticket holders will still be there. Regardless of the price, we'll grumble. And we'll grumble loudly if the product isn't what we want it to be, but we'll still be in there.
Okay.
You know, those who say, those who sit in the club level right now, who might not like what the PSL is going to be and whatever, you know, in the new stadium, I hate to tell them. If they don't go, they open up the spot for somebody else. The new Atlanta Stadium, whatever they finally wind up calling it, will be full from the time it opens until they decide to open another four stadium 50 years later.
Okay. It's
going to be something to see, and if the product is like it's supposed to be, it's going to stay that way.
Okay. And that is spoken like a true fan.
Hey, man, you know, when you're passionate about it, it doesn't matter how much it costs, you're going to do it. So, like I said, those who are grumbling, well, it's like this. Those who are grumbling the loudest when it first came out, once they took the time to read and study, they became more and more silent. And the ones that stayed with the most noise are the ones, like I said, currently don't have tickets. So,
right.
You know, they may or may not feel that they can't get in, but like I said, if you want to go to it, you should go. Because,
right.
you know, And not necessarily just those who are coming in from other teams like Pittsburgh or whatever. It'll be full of Falcon fans. I know my section will be full.
Right, right. I think one of the things that I find very interesting is that being that you're a passionate fan, that now you most definitely going to be placing some demands on this team to win. And I think that's a lot of pressure on Atlanta going into the draft right now because they have not officially named their head coach. They don't know exactly what type of scheme they're going to play. So they're kind of going into this draft a little blind as to what they have to pick in the form of personnel. They know what areas that they have to address. But as far as scheme, it's going to be quite interesting. So they are really burning the midnight oil and trying to figure out exactly what can transition from different schemes that is going to make the team successful or even more successful next year.
Yeah, going. I was concerned about that too, with the Senior Bowl week and everything else going on, you know, and with the draft like kind of going blind, you know, what's the scheme we're going to run, and you know who the holes that we need to fill, and where we currently slit, you know, are slotted in the draft. Do we trade back? Because I don't want to get caught up in the highest rated player on the board in another Jamal Anderson situation when he was drafted eighth a few years ago. You know, we can't, you know what I'm saying? So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, I just hope whoever it is winds up being a stud, man, and leading the future. You know what I'm saying? We already have the president Julio. We see what the future is going to bring.
Yep, that's definitely
true.
And you guys do so much for charity. You know, you had the blanket drive, and you do a lot of other things. Tell me about this 5K coming up.
Okay, we got the Atlanta Mission Run to End Homelessness 5K February 21st down at Centennial Olympic Park. ATF Alcoholics have a team, the ATF Alcoholics Fit Squad. And as you know, we like to party with the purpose and give back to the community, so we want to, you know, extend in the off season our caregiving, you know, to donate, to take care of the Atlanta Mission for the great things they do for the homeless in Atlanta, thousands of homeless in Atlanta. Also, at the same time, it's twofold because we're trying to get fit as well. So, you know, if you want to join the team, just go to AtlantaMission.org and just put in ATF Alcoholics and Team. You're welcome to join. If you can't make it, you know, all donations are accepted. Nothing's too small. If you want to come out and cheer us on, you know, please do so. You know, it's all for a good cause. You know, anytime you can lend a hand, man, it's good to do so.
And I have kind of teased on and off the show. Well, I don't think I've done it on the show, but I've kind of teased all week to some people that there's actually an announcement that ties our show to that. And
okay.
And that would be that. Here in a few minutes, I have to actually finish filling it out, but I'm actually joining the team to do this 5K on that day to help pitch in and you know, just help raise the awareness so that people that want to donate, whether their money, their time, or just their thoughts and prayers to the homeless and stuff like that, can do it through this show, and it'll go to the team as well.
Oh, man, fantastic, man. Awesome.
It's just too bad Reggie's not here because I feel like he would donate money just to see me run a 5K.
Hey, he probably donate double just to see me do it.
Hey, maybe we can put him up to this. But maybe. In case I'll get you to say that website here again just in a second. In case people do want to, you know, come cheer us on or donate their time, effort, money, or just like I said, just thoughts and prayers to helping out the homeless population down in Atlanta, because it is still a serious issue. And I'm glad that you guys and a lot of other people have noticed it enough and try to put the recognition into it to helping these people out. So give me that website one more time.
It's www.atlantamission.org. And as soon as you go to the page, you can't miss it. Just click on the Run to End Homelessness, and then where it says Participant Team, type in the ATF Alcoholics. Everything will pop up. You'll see whatever team members we have. And, hey, man, we're glad to have you, man.
Oh, yeah. I've started training this week for it, and so far it hasn't killed me, so I'm still on board.
Hey, it's not about how fast you do it. It's all about completing it. So if you have to run some and walk some, catch an air, man, it's all about getting to the finish line. you know, you'll have the support, you'll have me, man. It's just a good feeling, man. If you really need to feel good, this is something you should get involved with.
Absolutely. That's been my kind of motto for everybody that's asked me about it. I said, I'm not looking to win a race. I'm looking to raise awareness and help raise some money to help some people who don't necessarily have it as good as I do right now. So that's what we're hoping to do with this. And I'll post all this information up on all the show websites and Facebook pages and all that. And Mark, before I let you out of here, do you have a Super Bowl pick?
I do have a Super Bowl pick. The footballs will be properly inflated in the game. You know, it's just like this. So, you know, since we've had heroes and villains, you know, there's always had to be a villain. You know, somebody always has to hate the mad scientist, the evil genius. And as much as I love the way Seattle plays defense, I'm actually going with the Patriots. You know, with the ball scandal and everything else, man, I think the chips are just stacking up on the shoulders. And I think Tom is ready to prove in his sixth appearance in the Super Bowl that he really is the elite quarterback. So I'm actually taking the mad scientist and Tom Brady to take the Super Bowl.
Wow. So that means so far out of our two celebrity picks for everybody scoring at home, Icky Woods picked Seattle and Mark, you picked New England this one, so it could be as split as I think the three of us on this show are going to be. And everybody will have to tune in next week to hear our picks. We're purposely saving them. But, Mark, appreciate you joining us, and look forward to seeing you at the 5K and hopefully before then.
Well, most definitely, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem at all. Have a good one.
You too.
Of course, that was one of the more awesome Falcons fans I've met over the years, and the quarterback of the undefeated tailgate, the ATL Falcoholics, and one of my team members for this 5K I just signed up for, Mr. Mark Cooper. It's always good having Mark on. And, Coach, I know you and Reggie enjoy when we have some of these guys on, too. He's definitely another guy that makes an impact in the community.
Absolutely, absolutely. My hat is tilted to the Falcoholics and all of their wonderful works in the community, as well as their strong support and participating in the tailgates for the fans and the home team.
Definitely so. And we have a few minutes left. I think we've got about 5 or 6 minutes. There were three Falcons in the Pro Bowl. I know Matt Ryan was named as a alternate, so now he's in, and he'll be looking across the battle lines at Devin Hester, who's also made it. I think they had one more, and I can't think of who it was. But besides Hester, obviously, for special teams, and Matt Ryan, the quarterback, is there somebody else on this Falcons team that you think may have had a good enough season to be considered a Pro Bowler?
I'm not sure if he made it or not, because I haven't looked at the roster, because I know some things have changed back and forth, doing some alternates jumping in. But the kicker, I'm not sure if he made it.
Yes. Matt okay. Bryant, I will have to
okay, he did
look.
Make it. Okay, so I'm not sure if he's on that roster or not, but if he's not, he most definitely was an impact player, in my opinion, that should make this roster.
Right, and usually if your kicker has a pretty good dominant year, it means your team may not have had the best year, but I would agree that any year Matt Bryant is worthy of being considered a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, I know that I don't know if you know, this is in the Falcons section. But I didn't know if you wanted to talk about the Hall of Fame class as it begins to bring that class to the forefront. Any thoughts that you might have had on the Hall of Fame?
I haven't seen the finalist list. I know people like Kurt Warner and a few other ones are on there that are possibly the no-brainers. I've been looking to see if there's any Falcons or Jaguars on there, because I feel like there's a handful of guys from both those franchises that should at least get a mention. Have you seen the list of finalists?
I have not as yet. The other thing that's coming into fruition, too, this year, or at least was getting a little buzz from my understanding, is that I think that the current Hall of Fame members are being more involved, I think, in the voting and or the selection process. And so I think that also a different type of look for what's taking place with the Hall of Fame now.
Yeah, and that was something I was going to bring up to you guys. I don't know if I had mentioned that, and I'll get Reggie's take next week, I guess. But another media guy brought up in the last week or so, it might even been Dan Patrick, but it should the Hall of Famers that are still with us, because obviously if they're not, they couldn't vote, but instead of a bunch of writers and people who can be very political, and players could be as well, but should the Hall of Fame vote each year come down to the Hall of Famers that are still with us as far as letting them vote in their peers and the guys they played against? Kind of like a Heisman vote.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think that by far the players that are inducted into the Hall of Fame and those that are still amongst us now most definitely should have a strong say, if you will, in those that are going to be inducted, because they are the players that make up the Hall of Fame. So to silence them or to mute them or to make their vote diluted, in my personal opinion, I would think would be an insult. I think these are the players that know by far, because they are there now, what makes up a Hall of Famer. And what best to get that information and that vote than to get that vote by your peers.
Right.
Most definitely would make it all more worth, it's already worth it, but it just adds that extra to becoming a Hall of Famer to me, and I think they should have a huge say-so. I think that once they select the class based on the criteria, I most definitely think that the vote should go in by way of the members themselves to vote that class into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I definitely think they should be given the nod. And last bit of information I was going to two things real quick. We got about a minute and a half left. Your quick thoughts on Jake Matthews was named to the brand all-rookie team and Julio Jones named AP Comeback Player of the Year award.
I think both of those picks were correct. I think Jake Matthews did a wonderful job. He got to step in and basically thrown in the fire, if you will. I think Julio most definitely came back and proved that injury. Although he missed, a substantial amount of games, he proved that he could step back in and be an impact player, and he did that. So moving forward into the offseason, strengthening himself and getting himself ready to play a whole season as much as he can, minimizing injuries and or injury-free, most definitely will probably be his focus. So I think both of those things were correct.
Yeah, definitely so. I thought so as well. Reg, you'll be back with us next week. It was great having Icky Woods back on. It was great talking to Mark Cooper again of the ATL Falcoholics. I'll put the information up on obviously the Javonte Woods Foundation and also the 5K to benefit homelessness in Atlanta. For the coach, Haywood Hill, I am Jeremy the Impact York. We will see you guys next week on the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show.
It's funny because it's true.